Well, this has been the week for catching up with the Biz News favorites. Earlier in the week, we spoke with Rob Hersov. Today, Dr. Franz Grenier. It's an incredible week, an incredible 2 months since we've had the Government of National Unity installed. Franz, you were so involved in the run-up to it. I'd like to kick off with a statement that was made by Corné Mulder last week when we interviewed him. He said, after the 29th of May, everything changed. And he was referring specifically to the coalitions, good friends, but like the Democratic Alliance and the Freedom Front Plus, are no longer such good friends in various areas. And now we're seeing the astonishing change in the approach by Herman Mashaba at Action SA, where he really can cause a lot of damage and, in his mind, make a lot of improvements by switching sides. Is this usual in new dispensations where we have coalitions?
Yeah, I think we should anticipate that there will always be moments of tension and conflict. But you've got to weigh those against the substance of the GNU deal that was struck. And when you do that, you can, I think, you'd be famously wrong, I'd be if I got this wrong. I think the substance of the GNU deal will, for the time, is so solid that for the time being, it will easily survive the relatively smaller conflicts and tensions that play out around. And the reason I say that is this is not just an opinion, but there are two substantive points I can make. The first is that the deal was very popular among South Africans even before it was struck. Amongst ANC voters, for example, 60%. Before the deal, when this idea was still an alien and was that a deal between the ANC and the DA is something that they thought would be very favorable. And amongst DA voters, and we're just dealing with those two at the moment, the same opinions held. So the idea that sometimes conjured around that this deal was a great sacrifice on the part of the ANC, an enormous compromise, went against the will of its supporters, and that amongst DA supporters, the same thing happened. The leadership of the party had to force this unpopular deal. That's completely false. The deal is popular in the public mind. Point number one, why it's substantive. Point number two is that structurally, this deal works very well. It's at a certain level, it's a government of national unity. And I don't think we should be snide about that or say it's not. It has been that. And that's a very good thing. But inside the government of national unity, the deal is also underpinned by an agreement between the ANC and the DA. And then that's very positive. So this the silly argument about whether it's a coalition or whether it's a government of national unity doesn't really arise. It depends how you look. But beneath that, the deal represents something else. In this election, the ANC got about 5% of its votes from what you could call the suburbs of the multi-generational middle class. It got 40% from townships, which are in some respects, the aspirant middle class on the urban fringes. And it got 40% from traditional rural areas. The DA's profile is very different. It got a substantial majority of its votes from the established multi-generational middle class. And what this deal therefore represents, beneath even being a GNU and DA-ANC deal, it's a deal between the established and the aspirant middle classes in SA. From the ANC perspective, that deal is necessary for its survival. Because if the ANC tries to survive by doubling down on the rural base, the party could collapse. because the rural base is diminishing at the mortality and immigration rate. The ANC can't easily break into the established middle classes because of the experience of those middle classes, what they've had of the past decade. But it can be very relevant to the aspirant middle class on the urban fringe. And in any sort of future election within any useful horizon to think about for South Africa the next 10 or 20 years, the established and aspirant middle classes will be the two dominant political markets. And the ANC holding a majority in the one and the DA in another works to give one a national majority. And the interests of those two constituencies are the same. The aspirant middle class want essentially the same standards of living that the established middle class wish to have secured. And the policies necessary to meet the aspirations or desires of either constituency are the same. The stability to attract high levels of investment, to get fixed investment to GDP up, to get economic growth up, to get a job creation up and supply the state with the revenues to run its social protection program. So when you come across these conflicts, that the mainstream media is sometimes very good at creating an almost damaging narrative that the deal itself is in peril because of this event or that event. Expect those events. They must happen. But this is not a flimsy deal, reluctantly adopted on the spur of the moment by panicked ANC and whatever DA. This is a carefully crafted and well thought through substantive deal that serves the best interests of both parties and also of the country. And from that perspective, it should, for the period immediately ahead, we'll get to the next bumps in the road. There will be some serious ones. But for the immediate period ahead, the deal should survive the small ripples and scandals and controversies that happen around.
So interesting the way that you've unpacked that. My experience through going to Davos for many years and getting to know people that I haven't had that much engagement with in government is that there are many people within that side of the spectrum who get a really bad press. And I guess that there's a similar situation when you were sitting in the DA and when you have a look at what's going on right now in China, where the pictures coming back from McPherson and Steenhuisen are almost of these wide-eyed innocents looking at this, discovering for the first time why the ANC has perhaps been engaging so closely with China. It's been an interesting thing as well for the president to take them over there, almost to seal this national unity you were talking about.
It's very good. And I mean, anyone who's been on a sort of investment trip or whatever it is, will know that if you travel as a group of people around the world or even domestically to talk about the investment climate, that does in itself have the effect of pulling that group together. And the China trip is such a great success, and the Chinese have managed it so very well, and the comments out of the South Africans are very reassuring that that's plainly happened. And on that point, where, you know, you get asked the question, will this GNU hold together? And I've given my answer. But I sometimes add to that answer this, that if there's a risk in the GNU, it might not be that it breaks up, but that the two sides ultimately discover that they have so much in common that it's impossible ever to pull it apart again. So I'm not saying that's the problem. It's a good thing for the time being. But this idea that the GNU is a great compromise, ultimately doomed, you could very easily argue that the risk is that the two sides will find each other And in that, the contestation, the political contestation around ideas and policies that South Africa needs to be a success might be limited by how well they get on with each other in government.
Did you think ahead of the election that this was a possibility? You did say to us immediately after the election that there's a high road or a Chernobyl option. And fortunately, your high road was the one that was followed. But sitting before the election, did you think that this kind of a government of national unity, A, was possible, and B, would be giving us the stability which we're now looking at?
I think to a very great extent. The thing that always weighed on one was that there were spoilers around who would try and break up the deal, because they understood that it was possibly sustainable and that if it held, it may become, it might yet do that for South Africa. We're not there yet. Still got a way to go. There's two speed bumps that we're going to get to. It could very easily become the predictable result of every South African election for a generation. And that threatened the interests of all sorts of actors, foreign and domestic. And whether they would succeed in breaking the deal up was always an existential risk. And ultimately they didn't, because the chief negotiators conducted themselves in a very sensible and pragmatic way. You know, what this was really was, well, what makes it a remarkable thing is that the people who negotiated the deal had very great differences of history and ideology and politics, and even of principle, an important difference. And they were able to acknowledge that, but they were also able to find inside, not minimize that or say it didn't exist, but find, despite that, the common ground that united them. And there is occasionally the media does it regrettably too often, exacerbating the things that make South Africans different to each other. And it's a very diverse country, so the differences will often be profound. And if we want to fail as a society, we'll allow a situation to arise where the disagreements and differences, even of principle, important disagreements, are allowed to dominate our relationships and the decisions that we take. And what the negotiators did, so very important, is that a different approach was followed. The differences were acknowledged, but the relationship was built around the things that represented common ground. And that's why it worked. Now, it didn't necessarily have to be that way. I mean, we knew the deal was popular. We knew it was strategically in the best interests of the ANC. We knew, I don't know to what extent the DA always held this. They might have held it. I'm not sure. But I would have said from the outside, from the DA perspective, the deal was important to do because it was possible. If the ANC was allowed to collapse further below its 40%, remember it gives up more than 15 percentage points in that election. If it gives up another 10, by the next election, the ANC's got 25 or 30%. The DA might not be attracting all of those votes. They could have gone somewhere else. The DA might still have 20-odd. The ANC 25 plus the DA 20 might have come to 45. And that was a dead end for the DA, because there would not be a partner with which to do a South African deal anymore. And so from the ANC perspective, to escape the risk of annihilation through doubling down on the rural base and the populism, this deal was necessary. From the DA perspective, to escape the threat of the irrelevance that would come from being a centrist party in a country without a partner with which to develop a majority, would be annihilation. And so it's just another angle on the same point I've made, that this This is a substantive deal that has deep, well thought through, makes a lot of strategic sense. It's arguably the only deal the country could have made if it wanted to survive as a unitary state. And we're in a very fortunate position that we live in such a country today. I'm a great admirer of America, spend time there and so on. So I'm not being rude about them, but I do tell my American friends, we had an election and the loser accepted the result, number one. No one stormed the Union buildings in the aftermath to try and overturn it. And then for Americans, the extraordinary thing, a bipartisan deal was struck where the two sides came together, at which point your American friend might say to you, that's a fantasy. It can't happen anywhere in the world. And it happened here. So it was the best thing that could have happened. And it's very unusual to live in a country or be an analyst in a country where you can say that about what the politicians, and obviously with the support of people, created.
Let's move on to a flashpoint in Chwani. In the immediate aftermath, my sense, and I think many people in South Africa's sense, was that what had happened at the Government of National Unity would trickle down to the metros, well, first of all, to the provinces and then to the metros. Now, the one province where it hasn't worked is Gauteng, and the one metro where it looks like it could fall apart is in Tshwane. Can you help us through that? Is Gauteng one of your bumps, big bumps in the road?
Well, there are lots of bumps I had in mind. But look, Gauteng, from the ANC perspective, is the rebel province. It hasn't easily gone along, sometimes it hasn't gone along with the instructions of the ANC. And on this coalition, it hasn't either. And in some respects, that's because within some of the leadership of that province is the nucleus of an effort to create an alternative to the national GNU, to have Mr. Ramaphosa replaced with someone who would break this deal and who would instead do a deal with the EFF and with the MK. So that's the ANC side of the province. And that actually gets to my second speed bump in 2027, December. The ANC will elect a new leader. And that will be a stress test of this coalition. Now, that's something that's very much up to the ANC. And if its internal evolution is such that it can produce a leader who will follow the drift of this current GNU, then we've taken a very important step towards this GNU becoming the predictable result of every election for a generation. There's no guarantee that will be the case. That's very much too early to say. That's the second speed bump. A year before, it is the first speed bump, which is the 2026 local government election, when the partners get on so well in China will compete against each other for votes. They'll have to do. And that can go in many different directions. If the ANC, ANC tends to do worse at a local government election than a national one. It stands to do very badly in Gauteng, because of the leadership of the ANC in that province. They've decimated their foolish political wrangling has decimated the ranks of ANC support in that province. If in 2026 the contestation is extremely fractious, that stress tests the GNU. If the ANC does terribly badly in 2026, that will strengthen the hand of dissidents in that party, who will say, look what's happening. This deal is not in our favor. The broader opposition is growing at our expense. They immediately go into the cycle of picking a new ANC leader. So the joint risks until 2026, on the balance of probabilities, which means it's not assured, but on the balance of probabilities, the GNU holds together. It's pretty calm and serene. There's not much to see here. On SA, the media will inflame tensions now and again, but if you understand the substantive nature of the deal, it shouldn't worry you too much. But we're going to get to 2026 and 2027, and we're going to have to pull our GNU wagon through that drift. And it's not assured that we will succeed in that. But if we do succeed in that, it will mean that the GNU has passed two very difficult tests and succeed in that. Then the prospects for the GNU holding for a generation plus are very much get stronger.
Sure. So big flags along the road, but at least good stuff. To Trani, how are you reading that?
I'm always cautious of getting into the sort of soap opera level politics. I think, contradict my own rule of not doing that, I think it's regrettable that Action South Africa never lived up to its potential to compete on the urban periphery. And too often, might have targeted its efforts and resources at a conflict with the Democratic Alliance. Its vote share relative to the local elections is down. Very important party, could have done extremely well on that aspirant middle class periphery, would have given the ASA leadership some real leverage in coalitions. But that hasn't often been the feature of the strategy and the conflict we see around Tshwane is a further manifestation of that.
What if they do the wrong things there? Surely they'll be punished in the next election?
Oh, severely. But already, given the potential that I was trying to stay away from party political affairs, given the potential that ASA had, where it finds itself today, there's been a failure of strategy.
And finally, for today, I did talk with Songezo Zibi, who's came into the election with Rise Mzansi with lots of excitement and hope. You were absolutely correct when you said they're not going to feature this time around. But he's talking about bringing together some of these smaller parties to try and occupy the middle ground. Is there anything in that?
Well, I mean, while we were sometimes down on the prospects of some of those smaller parties is that we didn't believe that the strategies that we saw them pursuing had any prospect of appealing to any voter constituency that could give them significant numbers in the legislature. And I think that's why they underperformed. And whether you group them together or whether you read them one by one, as long as that remains the case, they aren't going to perform particularly strongly. There were exceptions. Gayton McKenzie, who I think should be taken extremely seriously, he's a serious guy. He thinks, he reads, he strategic senses. Very attuned. He gets derided in the press as some kind of buffoon, and he's anything but that. He demonstrated what a startup could do with compelling strategy, scientific, well thought through. So it's not that these small parties can't succeed. It's just that the strategy has to be cast in a manner that it appeals to, and I'm not talking here about any specific party. The temptation can be to create a political party that appeals to your dinner party circuit. But the voter base on election day might have a different view of what it finds appealing.
Dr. Frank Grenier, political scientist, chairman of the Social Research Foundation, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.